strap on your tool belts and grab a cup of coffee. It's time for My Fix It Up Life with Mark and Teresa.
Hey, My Fix It Up Lifers, welcome to My Fix It Up Life today. And we're talking about designing for autism and designing for kids, adults, middle-aged people who have sensory disorders and how that is a growing thing.
Yeah, so, you know, design is a powerful tool. And thinking about how many people have sensory issues, and there's statistics like 3 million people in our country have some kind of spectrum diagnosis. And I think many more of us can say, you know what, I think we have some kind of, I don't know, environmental stimulus that's driving us mad too. So I think there's kind of things that we can find out from design experts, thinking about our spaces, thinking about all of our design tools and our little design toolbox that we can pull out and maybe make life a little bit easier for everyone.
Yeah, I've heard autism described as people who have no filter. And I don't mean that in the meme-y kind of weird Facebook way. I mean, they literally can't discern between a police siren, the kid talking 10 feet away, lights that shimmer or flicker. It all hits them with the same full force, 100% intensity. And when you're dealing with someone like that, the first step, I guess, is to know that that's happening. And the second step is to figure out, I guess, what works for them. And that's what we get to talk about today. And I think it's important.
It is important. So I'm psyched to talk to all these design experts that we have on today's My Fix It Up Live show. So stay tuned, and we will be sharing all kinds of really cool insights and tips to make your life a little bit less stressed. And this is My Fix It Up Life, and we are talking about designing for autism today on our show. It's kind of a huge, huge thing, I think, designing for autism, because you're thinking about, you know, when people think of autism, I think they think of kids.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I know that at our six-year-old school, they have this walk every year that is to raise awareness, and I think to raise some money for an organization nearby that does work for kids with autism.
It's a huge thing, and you wouldn't think that designing a space for the condition is as big a deal as it is, but it is, and it seems like it's even a bigger deal than I had thought. And lifers, we're talking with Carolyn Fetter, who is a designer who specializes in working with people who have these kinds of sensory needs like autism. Her website is called sensoryinteriordesign.com, and she's been kind enough to join us to give us more information and insight into, I think this is really important. I don't want to overstate it, but Carolyn, welcome, and please now overstate your case.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I love to overstate. Ask away.
Oh, my goodness, Carolyn. You know, I am a big, big believer in how design can change your mood, change your life, change everything, probably because I am a designer. But, you know, thinking when you're thinking about people who have autism or sensory needs, what are the major things that you are considering when you meet with them or look at a space?
Well, in reality, everything affects us, everything around us, and many times things we can't even see, which is harder to explain to people until the changes are made and then they realize how different it is. So I have the ability to walk into a space, and after seeing how it's set up right now, let's say I can imagine it empty and I'm just looking at a cube. And I'm able to assess the flooring, the lighting, the condition of the walls, windows, natural light, no natural light. And that's really important because if the cube, if you will, is not a healthy space, then no matter what you put in it, it's not going to work. It's like repelling magnets. Mm. So assessing the space initially is very important for any project, especially one for people with sensory needs.
Now, I am just thinking about what you're saying and, you know, imagining that empty space, I think, is something that a lot of people have trouble with. And I'm just reminded time and time again when I hear girlfriends who are shopping for a new house and they can't imagine having that house because of something that's in it that isn't even going to be there when they live there. But,
right.
You know, with our sensory kind of overloaded world that we're in, and just like we're so busy, we're always listening to someone talking while we're checking a voicemail or an email or tweeting about something, or, you know, I'm always getting my son like, do you have pants on? There's always a lot of crazy that happens in our world. Are this kind of design principles for autism can apply to all the rest of us?
It applies to everybody, and in fact, I used to work for a very large company, and the woman that used to help me arrange for appointments started referring to my regular clients, in quotations, as my patients. And I realized that I had created something that I was not aware of at the time, because of how I was able to explain things to my clients and break it down for them. Surprisingly, most people, from my experience, are not visual. And so it's very hard when they see, let's say, a red dining room, and that's not what they had in mind. They may turn around and walk out of the house. So I try to walk through spaces with people and wave my magic wand, as I say, and give them an idea of what it could be before they decide if they like the place or not, because it could look completely different.
That is so true. Absolutely.
I'm
Mark
little...
is quiet. That never happens.
I'm gonna throw you a softball because I need to gather my thoughts here. Do you use, and I'm tying into something you said earlier, but when you walk in and you strip in your mind all the furnishings and the paint, the windows and the sunlight, and you strip it back to that empty box, do you have a checklist, like a real checklist that you go through and sort of make sure you've checked everything off? And is there one thing, especially for someone who has a sensory situation like autism, that's more important or less important, or is it all case by case?
That's a terrific question, and my checklist is now on automatic dial in my head. But what I always notice, the first thing, because it is the most important thing, is lighting. Whether you have natural light through windows or if they're light fixtures that have the wrong light bulbs alone can cause so many problems, from distorting the way things look to emitting frequencies that can affect how people feel, and some can cause even seizures and migraines. So I can walk into a space and immediately go, ew, or wow. And if it's not wow, then I can make it that way. If I don't have windows, there are special types of lighting that we can put in there that'll make it feel like you do have natural lighting.
Now,
so I'd say that's on the top of my list.
Now, I imagine if people are going to your website, sensoryinteriordesign.com, and they are looking, you know, parents, they're looking for a solution for their child who has just been diagnosed with autism, and they want you to come in and help them, you know, reassess their room and figure out how to make it a more comfortable space. I betcha, and I'm wondering if then the parents feel better, too, after you have done what they actually called you to do for their child.
Oh, absolutely. Usually, as they say, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And we're all sensory. We all pick up different information. And so, yes, once one room gets done, the feeling is so different and the child is behaving differently. The parents can decompress a little bit and it does start spreading. And that, to me, is the most exciting part. But they need to trust me to do whatever it is that I'm going to do for them. And once it's in place, then it usually spreads, and that's very exciting.
You you in the minute or so we have left, Carolyn, and I'm sorry it's not an hour and a half. How often do you start to sense that sometimes your client is really a parent? For example, a dad's freaking out because his kid's got autism and he can't handle it. And you find yourself, as you mentioned earlier, treating your clients as patients, but it's really the adult to get them through this process.
Mm-hmm. Well, usually when they have gotten a diagnosis, they're working with a professional, and I will always ask to be introduced to that person because we have to work together. If there are any other issues that I may not be aware of, I have a background in psychology as well, so it's very, very helpful in any career, but especially in design, as you know, and then even more with this type of work. So you just have to be very patient with your clients and listen and observe their behaviors. If it's too much for them, sometimes it, even though I would like to help them, it may not be for them, or they may come back around after they process it. Change is very traumatic for everybody, but for people with sensory issues, you have to take it really slowly.
Yeah, I can kind of imagine how difficult it must be to create that trust in the very, very beginning. And so it's not like a normal design client where, like, I will say, okay, well, that's what you like and that's what you love, so we'll make it work. But from what you do, you are also, you know, trying to help them with something bigger than just, do you enjoy your home and is it what you need to live? So creating that trust where they can sort of buy into what you're trying to explain to them and change for them to make their lives better, it must be just, it takes some time.
It does take time. Believe it or not, what you just described is what I do with all my clients. There may be some regular clients, we'll say in quotations, mm-hmm. that want X look or something. We may not end up doing that because I do have a sensory assessment for all my clients. And so I get to know things about them that they didn't even know about themselves, and that makes it very special. And so the results are really transformational, and I'd say therapeutic, because it's not only what they love, but everything around them actually makes them feel better or focus or relax or be excited or soothed or whatever the function of the room is, we will get that done. And trust is, you just have to be very confident about what you do and help people through it.
Well, I just completely fell in love with you,
yeah.
Carolyn Fetter. And
yeah.
I think that everybody listening, if you don't feel soothed and intrigued by her work, I'll be surprised. So you have to go to sensoryinteriordesign.com to find out more about what Carolyn's doing to change the world one family at a time.
Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us. Lifers, stay with us.
We'll be back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Standing walls before you paint? Do it the Hyde way, not the hard way, with Hyde's dust-free sander. Attach to your wet dry vac and go. No drywall dust on your furniture, no tough cleanup when you're done. Buy online at Amazon.com.
Hey, lifers, you're back inside it, and we are talking about design for autism and design for people with sensory issues.
Yes, because, you know, when I think about designing for autism, and I imagine that a lot of people are sort of in my area, where you think about kids, you think about little kids, and especially like little boys. I don't know, I think maybe it's because I've read articles or seen things on the news or whatever about kids on the spectrum, but it's something that I always do. I think about children, but it's not just kids, because those kids grow up and grow up into adults. And so we are so lucky to have an expert with us, Mark, who wrote a trilogy.
Yes, AJ Perrone Wild, who's an expert, and I'm going to call her an Uber designer, both in this field, which I don't even know if it's a field.
A trilogy, though. I didn't get to finish what I was saying. A trilogy about designing for autism at different stages of life.
So, AJ, how did you get... What's your approach to this whole thing? I shouldn't even call it a thing because that sounds like it diminishes it, and it's not. But what is your approach?
So this kind of all started. I have a long history in interior design, and actually did my thesis in school on designing for Alzheimer's. And what happened is my son was diagnosed with autism at age 3. And I was really lost. I didn't know what to do for him. I wasn't a speech therapist. I wasn't an occupational therapist. I wasn't a doctor. I didn't really know how to reach him. And I ended up reading an amazing book by Temple Grandin, who's a very savant, autistic, famous person. And the book was Thinking in Pictures. And she really described how it was to be an individual with autism and experience a space and color in light and sound and looking at people. And so that just made my brain go into crazy mode and said, hey, I can do something with this. I know how to design. I know how to be sympathetic to how a person experiences a space. And so I think that's the biggest aha that I got out of the whole project was every individual with autism, it doesn't matter what age they are, is probably experiencing an environment, a designed environment, differently than you are. They could be seeing color differently. They could be noticing shadows where your brain isn't picking that up. They could hear different noises. And so there's so much stimuli coming in at them. They're just having a completely different experience than you are. And so I call that design empathy. And that's kind of what I've been teaching people is, how to understand how space can affect people.
That is such a really powerful thing, is thinking about design and thinking about empathy at the same time, because design can completely change how anyone feels about a space, and that you can use that power for good and to really affect people and make a difference in a positive way more than just giving people what they want. I think that's amazing.
Thank you.
And when you're thinking about, you know, a specialty like designing for autism, it's really not something that is so special in a way that it can't help everyone. Because I know we go to those birthday parties. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Holy mother of God.
I am just like, what is happening? Am I at a college rave? Like, why is it black lights? Why is everything fluorescent?
Why are there
is it
girls
disco
in bikinis
stuff?
On the TV screen? They're 5.
Really?
Oh, my God.
You've
the
seen that?
The bowling party, don't get
okay,
me started.
Okay, let's not go down that road.
Don't
but
get
it's,
me started.
It's
you got
so,
me started.
It's loud. It's crazy. It's like, what is happening? Those weren't the birthday parties I went to. And thinking about it in a way that a lot more kids are being diagnosed with being on the spectrum, how are these birthday parties, like, for a birthday party, what do you do? I have to ask.
Well, some of it is teaching these kids how to deal with these situations. And, you know, if we go back to the crux of the problem, about 20 years ago, we started designing differently. It was experiential design. And so you think of like a major retailer, and somebody would walk in there. It wasn't just about what they were selling. It was about the smells that they were piping in the smells of orchids, the lighting, the visual display, the tactile, like there's mist and fog coming down. And so when you walk into a lot of these designed environments, they've been created to give you an experience, an immersion. And that's kind of great for the average person, but for kids with autism, it's really difficult for them to be able to handle those environments. And so a lot of times what you do is that comes down to therapy of trying to get them to accept that it's not fearful, but some kids just can't handle it. And
so are we just having too many options with like technology and design and stuff that it's too easy to make something be absolutely crazy? Like with baby nurseries and kids' rooms. I mean, everyone sees these amazing things people pin on Pinterest. But if your child has sensory issues, like having a roller coaster in your bedroom is probably not the best idea.
It's not the best idea for me.
Unless it's a therapy tool, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's actually great research that was done a long time ago about nurseries and just typical children, that the kids that had a more neutral palate and less visual stimuli, they actually slept through the night longer and had better sleeping habits than babies that had a lot more stimulation and brighter colors in their nursery. So, I mean, I look at it not just about autism. Everyone, there's a spectrum here. And if we really talked about all the deficiencies that people have with autism, we all have a little bit of those traits. You know, you might be really sensitive to certain noises, or somebody might always need to sit by the window in the airplane because that makes them feel safe. I mean, we all kind of have a little bit inside of us, and that's just human nature. But where it becomes a problem is when you need that child to be successful doing something. Reading, doing therapy, eating. Sometimes it's about being successful, having that kid eat or sleep or be able to take a bath. And so that's where we kind of concentrate on making those environments adaptable so that they can be successful there. And, you know, you can't control the world, right? I remember the first time I tried to take my son to Disney World, and I was going there for a conference, and he was 4 and pretty early diagnosed, and I knew this could be a disaster. And so I took him to our local children's museum, and the first time he went there, he lasted 5 minutes and then had a meltdown. The second time we went, he lasted 20 minutes. The third time he went, he lasted 50 minutes. And then, you know, we built him up over a couple of months, and by the time we got to Disney World, he did just fine. In fact, that's, he said his first spontaneous word there. So that was, you know, really motivating to him. But
that sounds
I couldn't control the world, but, you know, you can control some things that are in your house or in the teaching therapy studio or the schools or the doctor's offices, and that's where we come
from. When, you know, in thinking about the design elements and how you can control design, I'm fascinated because I don't know if I've ever heard a lot about designing for autism for older people. Now,
right.
How do you approach that? We only have a few minutes too.
So it's really talking about accommodating what that person needs and having more a centered approach design. Every person is different. And, you know, some people can't handle being very social and they need certain accommodations in their own room. They need opportunities to exercise and maybe do their hobbies. And so if you just take regular elderly care and assisted living, that model doesn't really work for individuals with autism because they need different things. And so I think that's the biggest takeaway is that, you know, a lot of these individuals have special diets or they have sensory issues when they're eating and they can't be eating in a place full of people. They have to be in a separate room. And so it's being able to accommodate them and getting them to be successful in those environments so that they can be more and more independent. Technology is doing a lot. I mean, now we have all this equipment that we can monitor people and not actually have personal care assistants. But we can monitor them and see that if they're, you know, functioning well or if they're in the safety zone, and yet, you know, we're tracking them and making sure that they're not disappearing and doing things that are bad.
Well, I imagine that this is going to be a growing topic because as, you know, more and more kids are diagnosed with being on the spectrum or being suspicious of being on the spectrum, there's going to be talk about, you know, autism growing up and stuff. I can just see it on like NBC and CNN and, you know, this whole generation of kids that have been diagnosed and as they're aging. And because I don't think it's something that's new. I just think it's something more we're aware of. And perhaps we have too much stuff around us, too. That it just makes it.
Yes, we do have too much stuff around us.
Oh, goodness gracious.
AJ, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Lifers, you should follow her. You should get into what she knows. At AJ Perone Wilds, that's with an E on Twitter.
Yes, we'll have a link to it. And also check out our trilogy on Amazon. And we're out.
Take your inspiration into real life with Sherline Paint Products. From easy pour-in-store paint can lids to tools that help give you a perfect line. For more information, check out Sherline.com.
My Fix It Up Lifers, we're back inside it and we're still talking about designing for autism and people who have sensory condition. So it's not just autism. It's sort of that whole blanket thing. And we are joined by the super awesome,
lovely,
and hilarious,
beautiful,
and polymath, if you will, from gossip to really the serious stuff we're talking about. Joined with a head shake, Jennifer Bertrand. Thank you for being here.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
You are so gorgeous and beautiful. And like there's a light that shines from within, which is just magical. So I'm happy in a good mood.
Thanks.
And I'm having no sensory problems right now. How about you?
Just enjoying the sensations of having Jennifer join us to talk about this topic.
Because when I think about, like, designing for autism and sensory issues, and I think about designing for special spaces and all of this work that you have done with Ronald McDonald Houses and all the, like, sensitive design that you've done, which isn't just like, oh, my gosh, we just made over this beautiful space. Look at the color on the wall, the fabric. We did this all for 47 cents. No, that kind of design that we're all, like, you know, waiting to watch and know what happens. But, you know, sensitive design, I always think of you. And so we would love to just sort of know about what your thoughts are on this topic.
Well, and like you guys know, I've been given an adventure in life with our own son and his adventure. So I've experienced it from a really personal perspective. So when I do this, I think with my head and my heart. And think about it. You're designing a sensory space for autism. You need to quiet the noise of the world around them. So you have to make a space that feels good to their soul and brings it back to a calming basic.
How do you... There's no answer to this. Just I'm telling you now. When you're dealing with this, though, and I get it with your own child, but how do you find that soul that you're reaching to calm? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about reaching an emotion, and that's hard.
And honestly, like, for all the designers out there, anyone who's a parent of someone, it's really about taking the time to know who you're helping. The spectrum of autism is huge, so you have to take it on an individual case-by-case basis. But at the Ronald McDonald House, we have the things huge and things... Someone with every issue is going to be in that space. But for you, if you're doing an individual room, you have to know your subject and you have to take the time to ask questions. It's actually quite fun.
So how do you think about all the possible potential issues that kids might have who live in a Ronald McDonald House? Like, how do you even go through all of those different needs and situations that they might need to have in their environment to succeed?
One of the best secrets of being a great designer is really arming yourself with experts. So for us, it's talking to physical therapists, anyone who works with people with sensory issues. If you have a child and you're going to do their bedroom, talk to their therapist. So it's really educating yourself and arming yourself for it. But for us, it was thinking about kids away from home and needing a space that felt like, yes, you're going through something poopy, but you need to have a space that, and poopy is a technical design term.
Obviously.
but you need a space that made it feel okay to be away. So something fun, something that wasn't overwhelming, something interactive, something that could always evolve and turn into something else. So it was thinking about how to redefine a space in a bunch of different ways and a lot of different age levels as well.
Is there a difference? just generally speaking, between the younger and the older, do the older want something a little differently than the younger crave it? Or the principles apply as the age increases?
Like in reference to autism or everything?
Sensory situations. So, for example, you know, you've been talking about Ronald McDonald House, and I'm thinking about hospitals and almost saying to myself, well, that's the reason why hospitals are white. It's not because it's cheap paint. It's because it's, well, you got somebody with a broken leg and you got somebody with something else over here. Just paint the thing white and, you know, neutralize it. But you're
well, you know what?
Yeah,
Kansas City's lucky. We have a graffiti artist named Scribe who works with Children's Mercy Hospital, and he's really kind of taken it and turned it on its head, because you think of hospitals as sterile and white and boring, but Children's Mercy in Kansas City has made it like Disney World, to where you come in and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a part where Winston can press a light, Winston's my son, and like change the ceiling in the space. So part of it is having moments within the hospital, moments within the Ronald McDonald House. So you have your warm, fuzzy, safe room that makes you feel home away from home. And then you have something that keeps you busy. And yes, of course it changes by age, because think about it, all of us, like I'm not as, you know, into the same things as I was when I was 20, which I wish I was, but we all like different things at different ages. So you've got to think, it's like designing a kid's room. A lot of times I'll paint things on canvases so it can evolve and change. Part of the thing is keeping things, like having a little bit of an organic element within it, bringing the outside in. Because when you're in hospitals all day, you've got fluorescent lighting, your soul is already heavy, and you need things that give you a little hug and a push that say, this is only a moment in your life and it will not define every day afterwards.
I love
Sorry,
that.
Sorry, I get a little passionate.
No, and I do not like the way that, you know, the medical setting, you know, doctor's offices, they all look the same. They all buy from the same catalog or website. And, you know, hospitals, it's, you kind of feel like worse being there because it's not uplifting. And so I love hearing about how a hospital isn't that way. And I think grown-up hospitals should be that way, too. Like, if I'm in the hospital, I want to hit a button and make things change.
All I heard was 20 years old and goofing off. So what are we talking about now?
We're talking about having fun.
Well, even with design, when I approach clients' houses, I think about it. Every day they're going through the humdrum of everyday life. So who doesn't want to come home and have a space that makes you feel happy and remind you why you go to work, remind you why you love your children, even though at that moment you may want to, you know, put them somewhere else. Like, you need stuff to remind you that this is what it does, and your environment can do that. So caring about your house and where your house is, if your listeners look around their house, it sums up where you are in life at that time. So, and sometimes I'm the cobbler with no shoes. I'm in a life where my house isn't making me money, so I'm doing everyone else's, and I have a special needs child. And so I have taken the time to start working on my own house because it feels good when you take the time to take care of your environment.
Yes, that is so true. You know, taking care of your own self is not something that a lot of people who spend time, designers, carpenters, anybody, electricians, oh my gosh, you can't even tell my sister, her husband is an electrician. And
a lot of extension cords in their house.
Yeah, so anyway, but it happens to everyone, but caring for yourself, it comes out in so many more beautiful ways that you can help other people better, you can listen better, you can, you know, open yourself to more experiences and be less stressed. So what do you do to not get stressed? What are your little secrets?
Because
you live a very busy life.
It's evolved because I've had this whole medical journey through it. And my happy space is when I honestly do something for ourselves in our own house. It's funny because my assistant, we are doing her house, and it's like this beautiful, amazing house. And we're doing like this $600,000 remodel. And I took her cabinets that she ripped out of her house because they were too good to waste. And we're utilizing them in our living room and turning it into extra storage and all of that. So I think I love the adventure and the challenge of going, you know, how
how do I make pleather look good?
So. How do I make pleather look good?
$600,000 remodel. I want to work for you. How much do you pay?
Oh, Lord.
I know. Isn't that crazy? It's so nice. Like, I've been very lucky. I'm doing, oh, here's exciting. I'm doing a Sporting Kansas City player's house, Major League Soccer, and his wife was just on the World Cup winning team, Sydney LaRue. So I'm getting to help them in their house, which is cool because they are young and in their 20s and uber cool, and I show up a hot mess and, like, going, we're going to make this fabulous. But I wanted to go back about the sensory stuff. I do want to tell everyone, if you go on Pinterest, there are a million things out there for you to help you address a sensory need in a space, but you have to make sure you start with the core basics, like the colors on the wall and the whole overall space before you get to do the fun stuff. So I just want to make sure your listeners know, take care of the proper calming pink colors and then go on Pinterest, and it's really the world at your fingertips on things you can do.
That is so true. It's just like with, you know, taking care of your own self. You want to put moisturizer on before you put on all your beautiful makeup, right?
Wait, I got to jot
that. Is that what
down.
You do, darling? No?
Hold on 1 second.
I do think we do have to go, but
first.
So where should everybody find you? Where should we go on Twitter? Should we go on Facebook?
Twitter, JB Loves Design, Facebook, Jennifer Olden Bertrand, or jenniferbertrand.com, and I always have fun adventures up my sleeve.
Ooh.
Always go to Awesome Sauce.
Well,
you're fantastic.
Cyber stalking you.
Lifers, we got to go. Stay with it.
Sanding walls before you paint? Do it the Hyde way, not the hard way, with Hyde's dust-free sander. Attach to your wet-dry vac and go. No drywall dust on your furniture. No tough cleanup when you're done. Buy online at Amazon.com.
You know, we talk about design all the time, and there's a million shows on TV and whatever, approaches, Pinterest, and a lot of times I feel like it's just frivolous.
I know you think that a lot of things that I obsess about and think are wonderful and actually change your life that you don't even know about it, you know, those things are really important. Color, texture, shimmer, you know, size, space, picking the perfect object to put in the perfect spot just makes my little heart explode with joy. But this designing, this is a little bit different. It's the same tools, but just using them in a different way. So we're so glad that you joined us. If you want to keep going on this conversation, join us on Twitter, on Facebook, and send us little messages. Put comments on our MyFixItUpLife.com website. We'd love to hear from you.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Yeah,
here.
And subscribe to all of these shows. We love to have you join us every week, and we got to go.
Might be just a pretty face looking back at me. You might be an idle conversation piece. It might be another wasted memory tonight. I'd like to wait and see. It might be first date on a city street. It might be a gift that brings me to my knees. It might be initial carved into a tree, and I'd like to wait and see. Sometimes we agree just to agree. Sometimes we fight with the referee. I'm so glad you walked into my life, into my fix it up life. This is my fix it up life. It might be a white dress walking up to me. It might be a sunrise in a sky blue sea. It might be the holder of my front door key at night. I'd like to wait and see. Sometimes we agree just to agree. I'm so glad that you became my wife. This is our fix it up life. Just a simple be a best friend aging gracefully. Can that be a lifelong love filled guarantee? And I'm so glad that we sometimes we agree just to agree. Sometimes we fight with the referee. Fix it up life. This is my fix it up life.